Cascadia. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. Today is Thursday, October 22nd, 2009, and this is Air Cascadia. Long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delta.
We all know that PGE's coal-fired Boardman power plant has what it's done to the air. But do you ever wonder where all that coal actually comes from?
Class of county commissioners are elected, but Coos Bay port commissioners are appointed by the governor. Big difference.
And Big Pharma gets lobbied up in the name of pill profits. Portland area weather today. Bit of fog out there this morning. Cloudy later in the day with temperatures in the mid-60s tonight. Cloudy with a low around 51. Tomorrow, rain mainly after 11 a.m. and highs around 59. First, we go to regional news from around Cascadia. Yesterday, Oregonians rallied in Pioneer Square to speak out and hear others speak out against the West's coal-fired power plants. Here in Oregon, the dirty secret is that 40% of our power is coal-generated. But where does all that coal come from? My guest today knows exactly where it comes from and what coal mining has done to the land and the people. Brad Moorman with the Wyoming Sierra Club joins us today by cell phone as he's on his way to Seattle with Otto Braided Hair, Cheyenne tribal leader, and Wyoming rancher R.J. Turner, two of the speakers at yesterday's event. Good morning, Brad.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, thanks. How is it going? Talk a little bit first about this Sierra Club trip around the West, talking about these issues.
Well, basically what we're doing right now, we spent yesterday in Portland and we're heading to Seattle today to kind of educate people out here about where their power's coming from. I've always heard, and we've always heard, and people always tout the Northwest and Portland, Seattle as being very green cities, and they are, and that they should be commended for that. But part of this story that's not told is when you're burning coal out here, which both cities are, that coal is coming from the Powder River Basin of Wyoming and Montana. And our the area we call home is being sacrificed completely for energy usage around the country.
Apparently, the rancher, L.J. Turner, 6,000 acres of his land has been affected. How has it been affected?
Well, what LJ has been impacted by, you know, for really almost 40 years now, is the coal companies literally eating up grazing land that he used to graze his cattle on there. It's eating up coal mining. And that continues to this day. There's a major coal expansion for several mines that could essentially wipe out land he's been ranching and grazing his cattle on for generations. His family's been there since 1918. And these coal industries come in and basically, aided by the federal government, the BLM and the Forest Service, just say the better use of this land is for coal mining.
So,
and people fully need to realize that when they turn on their light switches, when they're running their electronics, something is happening at the other end to devastate the Powder River Basin. And we need to find new ways to generate power and do things, or this devastation is going to continue.
So these are the things that we don't see when we look down the Columbia River Gorge and we see that brown haze coming from the Boardman plant. That haze really stretches all the way back to Wyoming, to the Powder River Basin, and to lives and land that we're not in contact with. Thank you so much for that. My guest has been Brad Moorman with the Wyoming Sierra Club.
Yesterday in New York, an advisory committee to the federal government voted unanimously to further ease compensation requirements for Hanford workers who may have developed cancers due to radiation exposure. The compensation program offers automatic $150,000 payments to potentially hundreds more Hanford workers or their survivors. Kathleen Sebelius, Secretary of Health and Human Services, is expected to recommend the eased rules to Congress. The term for this is special exposure cohort. Sounds so much nicer than death by radiation compensation.
Doesn't it, though? Yeah, you can even greenwash death. Turns out even hardcore Republicans, such as Washington State's Doc Hastings, are wondering what we're going to do with America's burgeoning, glow-in-the-dark pile of radioactive waste. Hastings is asking President Obama how the nation plans to store or dispose of radioactive waste from the Hanford Nuclear Reservation and the Energy Northwest Nuclear Power Plant over the past 25 years. The nation has spent $10 billion to $12 billion just to study Yucca Mountain as a site for a national repository. But last February, Obama nixed the plan. Instead, he said he would launch a Blue Ribbon Committee to lead federal efforts to look for disposal solutions based on objective scientific analysis. There goes another $10 to $12 billion.
Rock Ridge Farms and Mayfield Farms, just outside Portland, have received certification for humane farming systems. Both supply beef and dairy to Pacific Natural Foods, which is owned by the same family that owns the farms. Pacific Natural Foods will be one of the first with widely distributed products certified by the Animal Welfare Approved, a nonprofit third-party organization that audits family farms for high welfare standards. The standards include raising animals outdoors, prohibiting genetically engineered animals, and banning the non-therapeutic use of antibiotics.
St. Helens is slated to be the site of the Northwest's first facility for recycling plastic, water, and pop bottles. The $10 million complex was made possible by state legislation, which set a 5-cent deposit on bottled water containers that took effect last January. That's the reason why the project is going ahead now. It wasn't possible before the new law to collect enough recyclable bottles to supply a recycling facility in Oregon. At least the St. Helens plant will eventually employ 50 people, and maybe one day we will take environmental stewardship seriously, stop logging, slow the growth, and protect the watershed. But by that time, the world will be well past peak oil, and there will be no plastic to sell water or anything else in. It's funny how we deal really well with small problems like meat or plastic water bottles, but climate change or nuclear waste, these are things that we really don't like to look at unless there's $10 or $12 billion tied up in it.
Right. Steve Forrester writes in the Daily Astorian, quote, "The political sign in front of the Astoria Warrant and Chamber of Commerce building that urges voters to support the county begs a couple questions. Support the county in this case really is about saving the political careers of County Commissioners Jeff Hazen and Ann Samuelson. Which part of rescuing Hazen and Samuelson is good for local business? If this attempted recall is about LNG, is the Astoria Warrant and Chamber of Commerce saying that LNG terminals on the lower Columbia River are good for the chamber's membership?" Good questions.
It is about LNG. That's the answer. Yeah. That's what it's about. Exactly. Well, the people of Astoria are lucky that they can elect different port commissioners. The county commissioners. In Coos Bay, the port commissioners, though, are appointed by the governor. Activists have filed letter after letter and are completely ignored because no one is willing to go up against agencies in the state or the governor. First off, they'd have to get their own attorneys. They'd have to file charges in order to change the way the Port of Coos Bay does business. Nobody knows this better than my guest this morning, Jody McCaffrey. Good morning, Jody. Thanks for joining us here on Air Cascadia again today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, there's a lot of news. There's a meeting today,
yes.
I understand. Oregon International Port of Coos Bay Special Port Commission meeting. Wow, sounds important. What's going on?
Well, they'll be, today they're going to be working on this land use option agreement that they have with Weyerhaeuser and Jordan Cove Energy Project. As if you look at the agenda, they have that on the agenda, plus this advocacy of the Oregon Resources Project, which is the chromite mining. There's no public comment. It's just kind of like they're going to come in, have an executive session, come out and rubber stamp whatever they've decided, and then we get to live with the result.
The chromite mining is something that hasn't really been on the radar, and activists haven't become involved in that, but again, it impacts the environment.
Yes, I have not gotten heavily involved in that, although I know it's an issue because it's quite a large area that they're wanting to mine down here, and it's going to impact our watershed areas. That there you go, and more impacts to the fishing and stuff. you know, I'm so heavily busy dealing with the issue with Jordan Cove. And, you know, this impacts, I don't, all of the state of Oregon, because part of this agreement that they're working out with Weyerhaeuser involves money, funds from the state of Oregon and also Umpqua Bank, that, of course, us port taxpayers will have to be responsible for paying back if this doesn't all work. But it's very frustrating when the port is appointed and not elected. We cannot have any recourse if things are not done, you know, with proper public procedures.
And why would taxpayers have to pay this money back if things don't go as planned?
Well, because they're part of this land deal involves a Weyerhaeuser property. The property the property 3 years ago when this land deal was first put together was assessed at $5 million. And the port is, this option agreement has the port paying $25 million for property that was assessed at $5 million. So we're paying five times the assessed value for this property. And $15 million of that came from the state of Oregon, the Economic Development Department's a grant from them. So when I've raised issues with this, and it's very frustrating because who didn't pay attention? Is this really worth, is this property really worth $25 million? Well, they did do appraisals after the land deal was already signed and on the dotted line, and the appraisals actually used the option agreement to justify the price of the land. It wasn't based on what the land is actually worth. So, I don't know. I have written letters asking that there be somebody investigate this, and it just never gets anywhere. So it's very frustrating.
It seems to me when there's such a huge discrepancy. Just give us those numbers again. Originally, it's assessed at $5 million, but now that figure is. Tell us again.
And the property at the time, the original in 2006, in May of 2006, these option agreements were hammered out. And the property at that time was assessed at $5 million. And they are paying, or their option was, and this is all contingent on the liquefied natural gas being cited. That's why it hasn't actually gone through. They keep extending these options. Well, they've extended them now 3 years, and so the appraisals they did actually are 3 years old, so they need to be redone. But if you look at the appraisals, the property was assessed at $5 million. And they were saying the port is agreeing to pay Weyerhaeuser $25 million for this property.
That's an incredible discrepancy. And I understand, too, that the necessary permits and so forth, let alone a draft environmental impact statement, have yet to emerge out of all of this.
Well, they actually, in 1999, Nucor, I don't know if you remember, Nucor mm-hmm. still was looking at some of this same property. And they actually backed out because Weyerhaeuser wanted them to take all the environmental assessments of the property responsibility of it, even past contamination, and the Nucor wouldn't do it. Well, the port, of course, just signed and said, yeah, fine. And I don't know, as far as I can tell by checking, they have not done all the proper environmental assessments of the property. So they're just actually putting taxpayers at an extreme liability if there's a bunch of contamination that takes a lot of money to clean up.
Not only that, but of course, just simply the purchase price is $25 million, is supposedly going to be paid back with revenue and taxes from an LNG project that is yet to be approved. That's almost like blackmail.
Yeah.
But Jody, that's all we have time for today, but thank you so much for joining us. My guest has been Jody McCaffrey, Coos Bay's leading anti-LNG activist. Again, thank you so much for being back with us today, Jody.
Thank you for having me.
The bizarre U.S. law triggers the deportation of surviving immigrant spouses of American citizens who died before they'd been married 2 years. The move is all part of the Obama administration's rethinking some of the more arcane corners of a Homeland Security bill. The new law would allow the widows to submit petitions seeking residency even when the spouse dies before 2 years of marriage. No one could possibly show that the old law has in any way made America safer, but it did make personal tragedies worse by triggering the automatic deportation.
And just very briefly in closing, does the name Billy Towson ring a bell? It should. Towson is the former chairman of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. He was instrumental in ensuring the odious Medicare Part D's passage. Towson reeked of corruption and found his place as a high-paid lobbyist for, what else, the pharmaceutical companies. Now, he's at the center of the Republicans' fight to protect big pharma profits at any cost to the public. For example, the 12-year patent sunset is but one example of the windfall in store for drug makers.
This has been Air Cascadia for Thursday, October 22, 2009. Engineering is Emily Young. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. Chris Andre is the producer. I'm Liam Delta.
You're listening to All Natural, Free Range, Non-Syndicated KBOO Radio, 90.7 FM in Portland, KBOO.FM on the web. Your support and your support only keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members, and again, welcome new members, and don't forget, it's always membership time at KBOO.
Coming up next, Flashpoints, Part 3 of The Anatomy of a Financial Coup d'Etat, and an interview with journalist Larry Everest on the change of venue in the trial of the cop who killed Oscar Grant in Oakland.
Thanks for listening, and have a good day.